3, 2, 1. 7 things you don't really need to know, but probably should. I'm Ciara Revan, and this is the Sunday 7.
On today's episode, engineers are harnessing the power of plants for clean energy, languages around the world are under threat from climate change, and healthy, luxurious chocolate could soon be on the horizon. But first, it was on this day in 1939 the uranium atom was split for the first time at Columbia University in New York City. This achievement began the Manhattan Project, leading to the construction of the atom bomb. New research from the US has found that an astonishing 1 in 8 cases of asthma in children could be linked to the use of gas stoves. In 2020, 38% of American households had natural gas cooking appliances, but in some states like California, that number could be as high as 70%. Whilst here in the UK and Ireland, the use of electric stoves is more common, these statistics are still alarming. Research has repeatedly found the emission of toxic chemicals and carcinogens from gas stoves, even when they're turned off, creates indoor pollution that can be several times worse than the pollution experienced outdoors from car traffic and heavy industry. As Dr. Aaron Bernstein from the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health explains.
These are oxides of nitrogen, or NOx, that get released into our homes when we use gas to cook. And NOx are well known to contribute to asthma.
Ashita Kapoor is the Associate Director of Product Safety at independent nonprofit Consumer Reports, and she also agrees that certain pollutants in natural gas are a serious cause for concern.
Nitrogen dioxide is a concern because we know that it does have adverse effects on respiratory tract, respiratory illnesses, especially for sensitive individuals such as children who could have asthma, as well as elderly people who also suffer from asthma.
Since his latest piece of research was released, the possibility of banning new gas stoves was raised by Commissioner at the US Consumer Product Safety Commission. Whilst they later backtracked on the regulatory suggestion, there are still steps that concerned parents can take.
The question is, what's the first best actionable thing we can do? And that is to make sure that we use hoods, we use ventilation. If we don't have those installed, can we at least try and open a window?
As the world races to find carbon-free energy sources, scientists in Switzerland say they've developed a small leaf-like device that could provide a long-term solution to the issues of renewable energy storage. Inspired by the natural process of photosynthesis, the artificial leaf can create hydrogen fuel out of sunshine and thin air. This is Professor Kevin Savula, chemical engineer at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology, Lausanne.
We've invented a device that can take water from humid air and sunlight and convert it into hydrogen, which can be used as a fuel or a chemical feedstock for a future energy system based fully on renewable energy. This is really important because there's really a lot of sunlight available, but the sun doesn't shine all of the time. So we need a way to store the sunlight for future use. And using sunlight to split water into hydrogen and oxygen, storing the sunlight in the form of hydrogen, is a leading method to do this.
Although artificial photosynthesis has been demonstrated before, the novel technology solves two previous problems: harvesting the water from the air and powering the chemical reaction with sunlight.
In the future, if we're successful to find a system with a high enough solar to hydrogen conversion efficiency and good enough stability, we can imagine these artificial leaf-based systems both in arid environments like the desert, where there's not a lot of liquid water, but also in more humid environments like the Lake Geneva.
Still to come on the Sunday 7, how climate change could be the final nail in the coffin for thousands of languages, and the feathered flock keeping a South African vineyard pest-free. Linguists around the world have sounded alarm bells over what has been described as a catastrophic loss of languages. Every 40 days, a language dies, and according to recent UNESCO research, we could lose half of the world's total languages by the end of the century. These are alarming statistics. To get a better understanding about why this is happening and what it means, we caught up with linguistic anthropologist Ana Luisa Daño. Hi, Ana Luisa. Thank you for joining us. So we're talking about the future of the world's languages. What does it mean for a language to die, and what are some of the steps that lead to that happening?
When a language goes extinct, it means that there are no speakers left who speak that language. So it happens when there are no children learning and growing up speaking the language. So it's often a gradual process that happens over a couple of generations, or it can happen quite fast as well. So basically there are speakers who are getting older and older, and then they pass on and the language is not transmitted to the younger generations. And eventually knowledge of the language and all the information it encodes disappears.
UNESCO research claims by 2100, at least half of the world's 7,000 languages could go extinct due to climate change, amongst other reasons. How do you see the pattern of language loss interplay with patterns of the climate catastrophe?
There are factors related to globalization, colonization, assimilation, pollution, displacement, migration. All of those factors are interconnected. And then when you add to that the climate catastrophe that's ongoing, you get added pressures to the situation.
Are certain areas more vulnerable to language loss?
Some of the areas that are more vulnerable to language loss are those where there are very few speakers left and very little support for the communities that speak these languages, and a lot of pressure for them to migrate away or assimilate to the larger cultures. So almost in every country around the world, we see places like that. Some of the areas that are most vulnerable to language loss are areas that have a lot of ecological pressures on them and social and political pressures. And areas where there are very few speakers left of these languages, there's been very little documentation of these languages and very little support for those languages. My experience is mostly in Latin America, and especially in South America, we see a lot of ecological impacts in the Amazon related to deforestation and to wildfires just in the last few decades. So the communities that rely on the forest to survive are really under a lot of pressure to find new strategies. So a lot of the Amazonian indigenous communities are really at the front lines of climate change and of deforestation and wildfires. It's important for people to understand that the loss of languages is happening hand in hand with the loss of biodiversity around the world. So we really would like people to pay attention to the biodiversity around them and then think about how endangered languages might express and capture and encode the information about biodiversity. And that's the work that we're doing at Living Tongues, and that's what we encounter every single day building dictionaries. We find such rich and beautiful information encoded in these languages about biodiversity. And we really want to bring awareness to that topic.
For our listeners, English is likely their first and only language. Why should the general public care about the loss of languages?
You could put yourself in a situation where you might wonder what would happen if English was banned or replaced by another language. How would you feel, and how would you feel about the lost artworks and literature and knowledge that's transmitted through English? So that's one way where you could realize the ramifications of what's going on. But really the most important thing is that if we care about minority communities and if we care about indigenous communities and their livelihoods and their identity, then we should really care about languages as well.
Now that we're in a position where we could lose half of the world's language by the end of the century, what can be done to preserve and resurrect them?
So at Living Tongues Institute for Endangered Languages, we really like to frame the issue as we're protecting linguistic diversity. We don't want people to get depressed about the situation and just throw up their hands and just, you know, think that it's a done deal, that these languages are going away. We really want to empower people to see that we can revitalize, for example, the original indigenous languages of the lands that we occupy. So we could do that by valuing place names. We could do that by empowering communities and really supporting and allocating budgets to language revitalization. As for our day-to-day at Living Tongues, we work with really amazing language activists around the world, and we help them document their languages by creating dictionaries and books and other digital resources that can help them in the long term. So we really have a lot of hope and optimism for making a difference for some of the communities we work with.
A team of pest-munching ducks are the latest hires at a vineyard in South Africa's winemaking town of Stellenbosch. The army of around 500 Indian runner ducks have a taste for snails, making them valuable employees if you want to keep your vines pest-free. The feathered flock dutifully patrol the grapevines at the Vergon Udlau wine estate, helping the owners steer clear of pesticides and synthetic fertilizers.
Calling the soldiers of the vineyards.
And this breed is especially suited to the job. That's according to the managing director of the estate, Corius Visser.
They don't waddle like normal ducks. They walk. They've got an upright posture, and their long necks actually helps them to eat the snails within the vineyards itself. When it's up there in between the leaves, they can reach that and they can eat them there.
As well as natural pest control, the ducks also provide entertainment for local tourists.
It's amazing how they behave themselves, walk in the row, and it's like they're in the army or whatever. Yeah, no.
According to Visser, Indian runner ducks are a fantastic choice for the job. They're very trainable and can easily slip into a daily routine. They start their day out in the vineyards and make their way back to the padlocks each evening, where they get additional bird food. And after a day of feasting in the vineyard, there's one more benefit. Their nutrient-rich manure makes great fertilizer. Just another way to keep the estate as sustainable as possible.
Still to come on the Sunday 7, an oil joint's secret research into climate change is finally revealed, and a GP's advice on what to do about that pesky lingering cough. Right after this.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
You're listening to the Sunday 7. Follow us for your weekday news espresso, or maybe try our UK edition. It's all in the usual places.
There's been an unexpected twist in the field of climate science. New research suggests that one of the world's largest oil companies, ExxonMobil, predicted global warming. But research starting in the late 70s, ExxonMobil scientists made remarkably accurate projections of just how much burning fossil fuels would warm the planet. This is based on a new study from scientists from Harvard University and the University of Potsdam. They say Exxon's own experts produced models on warming that were more accurate than even NASA's projections, yet still waged a decades-long campaign to discredit the science on climate change and its connection to the burning of fossil fuels. Stefan Ramostorfs is one of the study's co-authors from the Potsdam Institute on Climate Change and joined BBC News to break down the report.
These papers by Exxon, they have been in the public domain for a number of years, brought there by journalists, and my Harvard colleagues who are science historians have already done an analysis and published it some years ago on the verbal statements in these papers. And what we have done now is to look quantitatively at the projections by climate models that were presented by Exxon, and they got it pretty well exactly right, predicting the world would warm by about 0.2 degrees per decade before any warming was even observed.
As part of their investigation, Ramsdorf and his colleagues retroactively traced what Exxon did with the forecast coming from their own internal research department.
Our paper details some quotes by Exxon executives, which were clearly designed to cast doubt on climate science and make the whole issue appear not urgent and highly uncertain, even though they knew what was happening just as much as other academic scientists, for example, predicted correctly the global warming that was coming.
While Exxon today categorically rejects the idea of cover-up or the notion that they even knew for decades that burning fossil fuels was going to be damaging to the planet, Ramsdorf and his colleagues are not convinced.
We know that their scientists presented to the Exxon leadership these results, and these results came with uncertainty margins, and it was very clear that there would be a significant warming there. There's no way these modeling results could suggest that there is a possibility of no warming. These companies make many statements of how they are part of the solutions, but there are other scientists, not within our research, but people that have looked at where they actually put their money, and it's not always what their words are saying. So I would really love them to be part of the solution, but I remain to be convinced that they really are working towards that.
Have you had a persistent cough for the last few weeks? Maybe it was that cold you had while back, or perhaps the flu. Well, according to the Royal College of GPs, those pesky coughs could be lasting longer this year because people are picking up one infection after another. Dr. Helen Wall had this advice on BBC Breakfast.
There's lots of speculation about, isn't there, about, you know, whether these coughs are lasting longer or whether it's recurring infections. I don't think anybody really knows, but, you know, it certainly seems possible that we're picking up one after the other.
And this could be down to the time we've spent locked down and masked up.
I think if we look at the science behind it, it's a possibility that we've just lost our resilience to infections, because whenever we are out and about doing our normal day-to-day business, our immunity is constantly running that script in the background, meeting bacteria, meeting viruses. You might not even realise that, you might not even be ill with it, but it's constantly building that resilience and that ability to fight off infection. And perhaps some of us have lost that because we weren't mixing as much as we were.
But Dr. Wall is cautious to put all persistent coughs in this category.
I think the thing for me is that I do worry that because of all the coughs going about and people saying, you know, you're just picking up a cough after a cough, I think we have to be really careful that we don't miss people who have a cough for another reason. So, you know, if you've got a persistent cough that's going on, it could be that you're just picking up recurrent infections. It could be that you've got one that's lasting a long time. It could also be, particularly if you've not had the infection symptoms like fever and being unwell and snotty with it, it could be that there's something underlying that. So you might want to get some medical advice. You might need a chest x-ray.
Why do we love chocolate? Is it because it tastes so good?
Delicious.
Or is it because it feels good?
This is so smooth.
Researchers from the University of Leeds have found that chocolate feels good to eat because of its texture. They found that when we eat chocolate, the surface of the treat releases a fatty film that makes it feel smooth. But the researchers claim fat deeper inside the chocolate plays a more limited role. That means the amount of fat could be reduced without the feel or sensation of chocolate being affected. Dr. Siavash Sultan Ahmadi led the study and told the BBC that their research opens the possibility that manufacturers can intelligently design dark chocolate to reduce the overall fat content. This means a low fat, healthier chocolate could one day be made that still gives the same pleasure as high fat chocolate. Tasty guilt-free chocolate is on the horizon. This has been the Sunday 7. However you're listening, do us a favour and hit the follow button. We'll be back tomorrow at 7 a.m. with a regular Smart 7 Ireland edition. Have a great rest of the weekend.
Written, produced and published by Daft Doris.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, this is Kira from the Smart 7 Ireland edition. Just to let you know, we're pausing this podcast from Friday, the 25th of August, but you can still get up to speed in just 7 minutes if you search the Smart 7 and catch up with our UK edition. Thanks for listening.